to another episode of She Speaks Stories. This is Portia.
And this is Katie.
We're together again. I mean, we're always together. That's just that's just kind of how we roll.
I like your little ditty, though. That's it. And we have a fun guest with us this morning. Portia and I have been chatting with Andrea Bourgeois. I love that French last name. From Louisiana, and we've been talking about seafood and how much Portia and Andrea love seafood, and they made me hungry with their description. So we can't wait for you all to get to know our new guest. I'm going to jump right in, Portia. Andrea is not only an author of two books, but also a family consumer science high school teacher. I can't wait to unpack that title. She lives with her husband, Brian, and their four-year-old son in Lake Charles, Louisiana. Little side note, she went to high school with Adam Busby from the TLC show, Outdaughtered. That's another one I'll have to unpack because I probably didn't even say his name right. I don't know him, and I don't even know what Outdaughtered was, but you can tell him. Anyway, throughout her trial-filled life, she's continued to answer yes to God by showing others how to turn their pain into purpose. Love that. So if your relationship with God feels stagnant and you are desperate for hope, listen in and get ready to receive some practical wisdom. Welcome. Andrea, welcome. Andrea. Welcome.
Well, hi. Thank you so much for having me on y'all show.
I have to ask, what was your maiden name before you became Mrs. Bourgeois? You were Miss
Cloche.
Okay. What are you doing?
Went from one French name to another. So
I love it. That is so great. Are you doing well today, Andrea?
I am. I'm doing really well. We have been really busy. We came back from vacation on Saturday, and then my husband and I and our family, well, both of our dads, have been forming up and getting ready to pour our slab for our new house.
Nice. Oh,
so we have not stopped, and we're doing it all ourselves. So my dad has all the equipment and stuff, but I'm tired. This is the first day. We poured yesterday. There was no rain. So today we're going to my mom's to swim and celebrate.
Oh, wonderful.
I love it. That's
wonderful.
So good.
Work hard and then rest.
Yes.
Yes. The best kind of rest. Okay, we're going to jump into the questions, but real fast, what is a family consumer science teacher?
Back in the day, it used to be called home ec.
Okay.
And somewhere between when I left high school in 2001, till I guess probably 10 years later, a shift in Louisiana education, they switched it to family consumer sciences education. Okay. And so you're considered a FACS teacher, FACS. Not FACS like FACS or FACTS, like my husband likes to say, I'm the teacher of all the FACS. But I'm like, like, that's not it. But so it is basically home ec, but very more in depth. So you have a basic FACS 1 class that just does like sewing, a little bit of cooking. Mm-hmm. And then there's a whole course that you can take, nutrition and food, baking arts. And then there is adult responsibility class.
That's amazing, because adulting is hard. And so anything we can do to help our students step into
absolutely.
It, more prepared, that's amazing. So,
like, what would you cover in an adult responsibility class? I'm just curious.
That one is my favorite to teach, because I have really dove into the mental health awareness chapters.
Okay.
So I love to teach on the self-perpetuating negative or positive cycle that your brain goes through when you're in the thoughts. I love to talk on anxiety and depression, how to grieve. Like talk about all the things that nobody talks about. And so when they come into that class, I usually have them face each other. And so I tell them, I'm like, okay, welcome to counseling 101. Like you are in counseling. And so we all talk about our problems. And wow. I open up and share like real life experiences, and then mm-hmm. it lets them know that it's safe and that they too can share. And 9 out of 10 times, once one has said like, well, I'm on anxiety medicine, or, you know, my mom is on this, or my dad and mom went through a divorce, or I lost my grandpa. Like when they start to like speak wow. up, then the whole class will talk, and then they know that they're not alone. And that's my number one goal, is to make sure they know they're not alone.
That's amazing.
I'm telling you, I got goosebumps.
Yeah.
Because
it's my favorite
to
class.
Be able to talk about this kind of stuff before kids go off to college or the workplace, or, you know, mm-hmm. so vitally important. I mean, you could change the trajectory yes. of these people's yeah. lives with awareness up front. Oh, I love that.
That's amazing.
And my biggest takeaway for them is to understand there's negative coping skills and positive mm-hmm. coping skills. Typically, sure. we all would go toward the negative ones when we're in something that we don't know how to process. But to teach them the positive, mm-hmm. it's my favorite. I have been teaching that course for about 6 years, 7 years now.
And everything you were saying about the brain chemistry and the positive versus negative, I was just talking yesterday to someone about that very thing, and how once you really kind of understand that, it's life changing. So I love mm-hmm. that you teach that. What yes. were you going to say, Portia?
I was just going to say, this is just a great lead into our first question for you, which is, what is your calling? And how did you know it was from God? And how did you hear from him? And I think that you've already kind of given us an insight into that, but let's not assume. Let's let you fill that in for us.
Let's unpack it.
Well, when I was 24, I was 23 and I was about to turn 24. I went through a divorce at a very young age. So I got married very young. Up until that point, life was easy. You know, like I didn't have any hard things. Like I went to college, went to school, everything just seemed fairly easy. Never had traumatic events, didn't have major crisis. You know, it was just life was pretty easy. But then everything came to a halt in that. And God showed me his faithfulness in how much he loved me and how much he wanted for me, because he took me out of a very toxic, bad relationship. Mm-hmm. And in that, while he was taking me away from it, I knew that this was going to be the hardest thing that I've ever done in my life. Mm-hmm. And that God was going to use this somehow, because I knew I had a calling in some type of ministry, but I didn't understand how to press into that. Sure. I didn't know how to learn how to follow God's will. I just thought, well, if this is what I need to do, this is what I need to do. If this fellow wants to marry me, well, okay, let's go. Like, didn't understand the severity and the importance to pray before sure. major life decisions. Mm-hmm. But he makes all things work for the good of those who love the Lord. So he knew that. And he knew that I also just needed to have a little bit of life under my belt. And that catapulted me into, I'd say, learning how to cope with a crisis. And in that, I got a counselor, went through lots of just personal counseling, group therapy. I learned a lot about like how the brain and like depression and anxiety and all those things. And then, so I knew then, okay, God has got something bigger for me. Cause if not, he would have probably just let me stay in that terrible marriage,
right.
But he got me out for a reason. And then, years later I had remarried and his sister passed away with a very rare liver cancer. Mm-hmm. Watching my family go through that, I was able to pull from the things that I had learned from my divorce at a young age to help my in-laws and to help my husband and to help myself like process this grief. There again, knew that God was allowing these hard things within like a decade. It seemed like I was like in a decade of just hard mm-hmm. with one struggle after the next. And, I kept hearing in my spirit that people are going to be changed by my words. Mm. mm-hmm. like because of what I'm going through, like I'm going to be able to help people through it. And then I remember very loud and clear in my head, it was like the Holy Spirit was speaking in my head saying, write your stories, write it. And so I went all the way back to 23 years old and started writing all the hardships. And over time, they started to form this compilation of God's mercy and God's grace and God's faithfulness and his restoration and how to deal with pain. And 2 years ago, I took a huge leap of faith and went to a women's conference on how to, a writer's women's conference.
Yeah.
And while I was there pitching this book idea of all these stories that I had written, because God just kept like pushing me, it's there when I was on the plane coming home, I looked at my best friend and I was like, oh, I'm in the ministry. Like, like this is how God put me here. Like, oh, it all makes sense. So how did I learn or know of my calling? It was just something I think the Holy Spirit just had in me, and he nudged me and nudged me until he knew I was ready. Mm-hmm. And then he sneaky Jehovah.
I was going to say, it's like it was like a slow unfolding versus, you know, one day God goes, Andrea, do this and that, and that is your calling, you know, and you say, yes, Lord. Okay. I'll get started right now. It's more of an unfolding of experiential and learning and your own counseling and seeing, and then using it with family and this and that. I love that. Oh, I love that. But then a surety. I like what you said, coming home on the plane, it all made sense. It like then a surety of, yes, this is ministry. This is a calling. This is forward. Was it then that you got that job teaching? I'm not going to call it home ec. I am going to call it consumer science high school teacher.
I actually, in 2009, right when I was meeting my husband, that we've been married for 10 years now, Brian and I, when I was dating him, I decided to go back to school because I went on a bunch of mission trips overseas. And it was there, Lord's hand was in all of that, because I went to Belize and then I went to Kenya, and I was in Kenya in this field of 500 to 800 little kids doing hokey pokey with them. Mm-hmm. And this doctor, I was with a bunch of doctors, and this doctor walked up to me and he was like, you must be like a great teacher. And I was like, I'm not a teacher. And he was like, well, you should be. And I thought, did you take me, Lord, the other side of the world to tell me I need to be a teacher? What? Like, so then I went home and researched, because at that point I had a family consumer science degree. I didn't have education with it. It was just a basic bachelor's of science in family and consumer science. And, I just did a bunch of research, and the Lord just kept pushing me and opening doors, like flying open to get my master's in education. And so that's when
I got it.
The reason why I'm a facts teacher or family consumer science teacher is because that was my undergrad. Like, who knew?
Of course. Who knew? I love that.
I got my degree with my first degree with a concentration in fashion merchandising. Like, he even used that to get me to get that degree. So that way, when I became the teacher, I could teach home ec for
that. Right.
It's like his hand was in it the whole way through.
Oh, that's so beautiful. So beautiful. Let's get into a little bit the idea of trials and tribulations, and the idea that you write and talk about turning pain into purpose. And obviously, we all know that in this world, we will have trouble. Mm-hmm. Everybody has trials and tribulations, and there's so much heartache. And you started writing about your own personal heartache and how you got help and blah, blah, blah. So obviously, you talk about that, you write about that. Just a quick question. Well, quick. What would you tell our listeners maybe right now that are struggling with the pain maybe of, I don't know, racial injustice, COVID, depression from being losing their job or, you know, there's so many layers, but what would you tell our listeners? That's a big question. Sorry.
Yes. the first thing I would do is acknowledge that you're hurting and that you're in pain and that you've been hurt. Because we can't get help until we acknowledge that we need help. Sick. And so the first thing would be to just acknowledge that, yes, I have been hurt in this, that whatever situation has caused me pain, to identify it. And then I would, this is what I've done in the years. I picture myself sitting at a table with Jesus because he prepares a table for us. And I imagine that I'm sitting at that table and I basically have all my junk that I'm hurting, my pain, scars, lies that have been told about me or to me, or I've said, you know, whatever it might be, that I just put it all on this platter and I just shove it over and I put it at Jesus and say, I'm ready for healing. Like, I am ready to clean this. I'm ready to process this and just, kind of laying it all out there on the table, like letting him realize that I acknowledge that I'm hurting. I own up to maybe my mistakes. Or the bad decisions that I've made. Because if we hide those thoughts from God, we think we're hiding them, but he's waiting for us to finally surrender it. And so if you're hanging on to bitterness and hanging on to the pain from years ago, or for the last, since ever you've been around, it's time. If you want true healing, you've got to lay it, you've got to lay it down in front of him. And, I would also pray, and I would ask the listener to pray and ask God, what is it that you want me to learn from this? Because my favorite saying or quote that got me through a lot of stuff when I was going through that divorce was Dr. Charles Stanley says, the darkest moments in life will only last unnecessary until God has accomplished his purpose.
Wow.
So I would pray and ask, Lord, what do you want me to learn from this? You know, I feel like we all have a part. Every single person in this world has a part in the racial injustice because, you know, we have to realize our part in it. And then when you can acknowledge it and say it without being defensive or without being, you know, you have to say, Lord, I'm sorry. Like I didn't, you know, it may be by accident and it may have been from generations taught that way, but it, you know, kind of like the generational sin type things, you know, or like addictions, like it ran into my family until it runs into me. And that's how we feel raising our son. You know, I do believe it's up to us, our generation, with this younger generation coming up, to really like top that, you know, like to put it into it or to help it die down even further. Knowing our place in it, COVID. I mean, I sat there and realized real quick, I had anxiety and fear that I was letting control me. And God let me know that, like he allowed COVID and that whole quarantine and that period of time to really show me like, you can't do this alone. Like you're going to have to come to me. And so acknowledging, kind of going through that process with him, and then just being in the different seasons of depression, or like something that I also teach my kids is that you can be depressed and you don't have to be clinically depressed. Diagnosed with depression, like so we all feel depressed at certain times during you know, certain things. There, we have different stressors. They may be, you know, normal stressors, school, a breakup with, you know, a boyfriend or whatever. Now if it's a long-term boyfriend, I would always tell them that's more of a crisis. You know, I mean, when your world's falling apart and you keep crying and you can't stop crying, then we got something major happening here.
Right.
But, you know, until we acknowledge that we're hurting and we see it for what it is, like, it's okay to say, hey, I'm hurting.
Right.
And I'm sad. And so my two biggest things would just be to encourage the listener to maybe imagine, visualize themselves sitting at a table with Jesus, and then acknowledging, starting there, acknowledging that they're, acknowledge all the pain, the captivity that they felt inside, or the shame that they have felt inside for so long.
Andrea, I so appreciate you talking about acknowledging and bringing light to what historically have been really dark things. You know, depression can be a really dark thing. Anxiety can be a really dark thing. And even, I'm trying to remember if we might have talked about this before we got on, or maybe we talked about this and I'm about to repeat it, that what you do with your students, having them face one another, that you're going to talk about your real faiths, and that you lead by example by sharing your story. These are things that have happened in my life that have been very difficult. And when you're talking about shifting things for the generation, I have amazing parents, but they didn't necessarily tell me while I was growing up all of the hard things that they were walking through. Now, as an adult, I know these things. And I'm not saying that adults need to tell their kids every single thing that they're dealing with, but I think there's something for saying out loud, hey, this is a difficult season. This is, we are asking God to give us wisdom. We're not sure if this is going to work out, but we know that God has a plan. I think there's something powerful in that. And even if you're not walking with the Lord, there's still power in acknowledging, I have a hurt, I have a need, I need help, because all of it is shedding light on a dark space. And when we shed light in a dark space, it's almost like, you know, on really sunny days, really pretty days, and you're like, man, it's gorgeous. And you're like, man, I need the dust in my house. When we bring light into darker spaces, we see the things that need to be readjusted and realigned. And so I love what you and your husband are doing for your son, and you're redoing what has been done generations back, and not by just working on it privately by yourselves, but by talking about it, because there's so much freedom that comes in that talking and acknowledging, hey, this is not right. Let's change it. Let's do something different. I don't like this mindset, so I want to have a new mindset. And I couldn't help but thinking, when you teach your students about that there are negative coping mechanisms and there are positive coping mechanisms. And I don't have research to back this up, but I'm pretty sure from my own life experience, the positive coping mechanisms are harder to put into place. The negative ones, I mean, you just sit down somewhere, right? You just turn on your TV or flip on your phone or whatever the case may be, and you can just check out. And the positive things require effort, but effort that is so worthwhile. So why is it so important to tell and to share your story? And where have you seen God revealed in your story, Andrea?
I feel it's important because every time I tell my story, I am encouraging someone else to look into their own heart and their own life and look back in their past and see God work in their life as well. And every time we share our story, we're changing people's lives because our story is our testimony. It's showing the faithfulness of the Lord, whether we acknowledged his presence in that time or not. His faithfulness was there. And so I love sharing my story with my students. I love sharing my story just in the things that I write or anywhere that I go. We are doing these outreach community nights in our area right now because our area has suffered from 4 major weather catastrophic events. We had 2 hurricanes like this past August, and then we had this crazy freeze where it snowed for a week, or it was snowed for like a day or two, but then the ice stayed for
freezing
a week.
Cold. Yes.
And our homes, we don't have cellars and basements. We don't have that. You know? And then we had another flood that happened recently in the last month or so. So a friend of mine that is a licensed social worker, she said, let's get together and we are doing these community nights to where people show up. We do different churches throughout the community and we are doing two things, telling our stories, sharing what we were learning, what we went through, how we got through it, and teaching positive coping skills.
Come on.
And teaching them like, okay, you're not alone. Mm-hmm. We got this. And her famous, like her quote is, it's okay to not be okay, but let's not stay there. And so she and I have been best friends. She's actually the one that went to the writer conference with me. She went for the speaking part. So it's cool how we've seen, you know, God kind of play through our lives. Sharing my story each time reminds me of his faithfulness as well. Mm-hmm. And each time I make another leap of faith to say, yes, Lord, like all he's looking is our best yes. And so, you know, we said yes to these nights, to these once a month, community outreach nights. And while we're doing that, he's opening more doors and he's showing me how he taught me how to be a teacher in home ec, which was my first degree, which is bizarre to even think that that's how I became a teacher, but is to prepare me so I can teach these skills now to adults, to everyone.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, it just goes full circle. And
he weaves it all together, our education, our experiences, our, and like you said, nudging and weaving, and then, oh my goodness, I get to do this now with adults. And
Before I became a teacher, I remember in speech class, I mean, I would hive, well, I still have a little bit when I get nervous, but I'll get real red on my neck, or I'd hold a piece of paper and it would shake violently. Teaching for the last 10 years has it's coached me in how to be a speaker.
Yes.
And now I can, you know, it's like each thing that I've said yes to and I've, you know, trusted the Lord, and even decisions that I didn't trust the Lord and didn't ask him, like my first degree, he's used it to mold me into where he's taking me. And, you know, the Pain Into Purpose last summer after COVID, a friend of mine, we said, let's put on a summit. Let's get women to share their stories. Everybody is hurting. Mm-hmm. Everyone has a lot of junk that they're dealing with on top of COVID.
Right.
So let's get people like seeing that they're not alone. And while I was preparing for that summit is when I got my first book deal for my Bible study that came out in February.
Congratulations. Just
thank you. But then as the publisher watched the summit, she called me and pitched me another book deal for Anchor My Soul that's about to release.
I love that
the publisher wanted to take the whole summit and turn it into a book.
Wow.
She was like, I want all the contributors to write their story, and then she wanted me to write the devotion for each one.
Sure.
Oh so, my goodness. That so is you remember, fabulous.
Thank you. So if you remember Chicken Soup for the Soul,
absolutely.
It's like, it reminds me of that, because you're reading someone else's hardship, their pain, turning it into purpose. And then there's a little devotion at the end. And so this releases, we're starting to pre-order now on Barnes & Noble.
Okay.
And then the release date is in July. So it's just, I'm mind blown, like, of everything that God just keeps doing. Because I said yes to the summit, then he said, oh, well, here's your second book. Like, who gets two book deals in 1 year?
Wow. Absolutely.
Especially if you're
absolutely
a nobody. I'm not a famous author. No, like, so it's
so beautiful.
So how have I seen the Lord work in my store, in my life? He's everywhere. Like,
you can't even say, X, Y, Z, because it's A through Z. Everywhere, everything.
He is weaving together every little part, every little decision. And especially since I said yes to go to that writer's conference is when I saw the excel of like I went from like, you know, I'm coasting, now I'm like on a roller coaster with Jesus, like we're just going. And it really took me getting rid of the fear of, well, what are people going to think of me?
Right.
I'm not a fancy, beautiful, what's the word? Like an author that just writes so eloquently, like that's not me. You know, I'm real and down to earth. I probably throw a few big words in there every once in a while, but it's pretty common, you know, like, I mean, the funniest part is, I was a terrible test taker growing up. And so when I went back to be a teacher, I kept failing the reading comprehension, like little section to get in to get your certification. And now I'm writing a book. And I'm like, okay, Lord, like what else can you do?
When we are weak, he is strong.
That's right.
And so
he's everywhere. Oh,
that is beautiful. I love that. And how perfect that you are on our podcast called She Speaks Stories with the tagline that stories change lives.
Right.
And truly the idea that every single person's story matters.
Yes.
But it is hard and vulnerable sometimes to share your story with people. So I love that you said you had to get rid of the fear. Mm-hmm. And I love that you're teaching your students, lay down the defensiveness, and you don't have to prove that you didn't make any bad decisions. It was everybody else's fault. You know, you can own your own bad decisions. Lay down the defensiveness, get rid of the fear, and let's deal with reality. And then you find real healing, not just superficial. Yes. But along with the tools of what are some positive coping mechanisms, stay away from the negative ones. I just love this. And listeners, I mean, I really hope you're hearing your story matters, whether it's dramatic or not. And I say that because honestly, Andrea, it's funny. I wrote a book that sounds a little bit similar to yours, How to Find Hope, Help, and Healing in a Hard World. I know that's way too much alliteration, but I don't care because I'm like you. I'm not this author, really, at all. I just kept feeling nudged, and I don't care. I like alliteration, so there you have it. But but truthfully, sometimes when I sit across from people and they share their story, and it's filled with horrible pain and horrible trauma on a level that I cannot even. I literally want to rip up the book that I wrote. And I'm not kidding. This happened 2 weeks ago. I sat at lunch with a woman who told me her story from start to finish. And in my spirit, I wanted to go home and rip up that book. And I felt so ashamed of my own story and my own writing because it was so petty. Everything I had been through compared to her story seems so ridiculously petty. And seriously, you struggle with that, you know? And God had to show me. You're on a podcast that celebrates everyone's story and says your story is important. Okay, now that gal sharing her story, she could relate to all kinds of people that had had similar deep traumas. My book is filled with very small traumas, but there's a lot of women out there that can relate to the smaller traumas. And I was like, don't you dare be a hypocrite and say that you believe stories are important no matter what they are, and then feel ashamed of your own.
It's good.
I don't know. Maybe someone out there needed to hear that today. I don't know why I'm going on and on about that, but I think you would agree, Andrea, that it doesn't have to be a story of a certain depth of trial. And I like how you're doing these community things where, okay, maybe someone's house flooded. Maybe someone's pipes burst during the freezing. Maybe someone lost their job. Maybe someone's dealing with depression. And maybe it's on all different levels. But every person's story is valuable. Every person's life has purpose. No matter the depth of the pain, there's purpose in that pain if you can take it to Jesus and find help and healing from him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's my two cents on all that. But what I want to ask you is, obviously, you're working with people that are grieving on some level. Do you have any wisdom of what should you absolutely do or don't when you're talking with someone who's grieving, just to be given permission for them to grieve? Because some of us have taken on, like, you really, if you're a Christ follower, you better not cry. You better not pout. Wait, that's Santa Claus.
That's Santa Claus. Not cry.
He's coming to town. And but you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I used to kind of think that, and I remember when my mom died, it was so weird. I kept apologizing to God for weeping. And I kept saying, God, I'm so sorry. I know that you have a plan and a purpose. I know my mom's in a better place. I'm so sorry. I'm a wreck. And then later I learned, boy, that was dysfunctional, Kate. God can handle your pain and your grief. You don't have to apologize to him. He is weeping with you. He is he wants to hold you. He doesn't want you sitting there apologizing to him.
Right. But
so my question to you is, you deal with this. Are there some do's and don'ts that help?
Yes. My family and I kind of, about 2 years ago, we kind of sat down. My sister-in-law passed in 13. Mm-hmm. So it was around 18, 19, when my mother-in-law and I sat down and I said, I want to pick your brain. Like, I want to know what would have helped you and what didn't help you when you were grieving in the thick of it. And because I knew that I was preparing for the writer conference and all those things. And I knew that you need a website, you need a blog, and you need all that, all those things. And so the Lord just kept putting on my heart, like, speak on grief, speak on, you know, all these different topics. And so when it got to the grief one, I sat down with her, and then one of the main, there's six of them. I think I did a blog post on them. But they, to put them in order, the first one is mention the deceased's name in front of those that are grieving, especially if it's their child or spouse. Like, keep telling stories. Do say their name. Mention their name. Don't be afraid, and then don't avoid saying their name. Because a lot of times people, they're telling a story and then they're, I shouldn't say that child's name.
Right.
You know, and then they're like, I don't want to make you sad. You know? But it might make you feel awkward, or you might think it will make them sad, but it actually is going to make them feel worse if you avoid their name.
Because it's like their loved one never lived. Like, you know, like.
We don't want to erase a memory.
Right. We want their legacy and their memory to keep going.
Yeah.
And so that it helps them grieve happy thoughts of their child or their husband or their wife or their, you know, whoever, or their parent or their sibling, to know that, oh yeah, you remember that? That was good. Like, those were sweet memories and that kind of thing. Another one would be to listen to them, let them talk, let them vent, let them cry. Just simply listen and don't try to give them advice.
I gotta fix you right now. I gotta say the right words so you're not in pain anymore, because I'm uncomfortable with your deep pain. So get it.
If we can refrain from trying to fix their pain and giving them advice, it helps them feel that you really are there for them, like, because you're just gonna let them cry and let them vent. And if you can refrain from saying God's in control and everything happens for a reason, that's like the worst thing to say.
The absolute worst thing to say.
It is true. You know, that is true, but they aren't there yet. And they will get there in their own time with the process of healing through this, through their grieving, but allow God to reveal that to them. Just pounding that over their heads, like, God's in control. It's okay. Everything happens for a reason. It almost makes them feel like, well, God must not love me, because if he thinks that this is best for his will, how can he think that this is best? He ripped out my family by losing my husband or my child, you know? So it's really hard for them to grasp. So if you could just avoid that that whole sentence altogether, it'd be great. And also, like, acknowledge their pain. Something that I noticed that a good friend of my mother-in-law's would say, she'd say, "Oh, Martha, I can see that it's really still a heavy on your heart." Like, she acknowledged, like, how can I pray for you? Like, when you feel this way, please call me. Like, she just acknowledged, like, I can see it in your eyes. Don't hide it from me. Like, don't put on, so just acknowledging to her, like, I know you're in pain. When someone would acknowledge it, it was almost like a brick, or like all this weight was lifted off her shoulders. Like, okay, like, she sees it. Like, I'm not trying, I don't have to, like, pretend that I'm fine. And then the other was to, this is something that she was very adamant. She's like, don't forget to put this, don't tell them that they're strong. Cause she's like, cause we're not strong. We are trying to not crumble at every moment. Mm-hmm. They feel pressure to keep it together, to hold their heads up high, to grieve within a projected time frame socially acceptable. Like, oh gosh, her child's been gone for 5 years. Don't you think she should be fine by now? Mm-hmm. Like, you hear people and it's like, you have no idea.
Yes.
Or, let's see. And then just to, acknowledge that they're hurting, and instead of saying, oh gosh, you're so strong, girl, look at you. You look great. Like, tell her she looks great, but don't, she's crumbling inside.
Right.
And then the other huge thing is, after the funeral, all the grieving committees leave, the extended family goes away. And then the number one thing that everybody says, well, let me know if you need something.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're not going to call me.
Right.
And so they're just going to sit back. And now with social media, it's very easy for them to just scroll through and watch everyone's lives keep going. And then they get reminded that their life can't go on because there is a person missing in their household, and it's just everyday tasks are really hard. Mm-hmm. And so to plan, if it's your close friend or family, or even if it's an acquaintance of someone, but you have gone through it and you know what they're going through, reach out, because you went through something. So that way you can now turn around and help someone else.
Right.
And so plan an extra 30 minutes on your schedule to go do your grocery pickup that everybody does now, go stop by their house for coffee for 30 minutes and then be like, okay, well, I got to get my groceries. They're ready. So that way you're not stuck there. You don't feel like you're going to be there all day, but make your presence there. Bring random things to their house just so it's an excuse. So that way they have to let you in and you can physically get your eyes on them and know that they're okay. I remember a friend of hers would drop off toilet paper, and we're like, why is she doing that? She's like, because you got guests all the time, girl, you're going to need to stock up. It was just her way.
Just something.
Hey, I just want to make sure you're okay.
Right.
Just remember. And then the last one is to remember the 2-year mark. Are actually after the first year anniversary of that person passing, that second year is actually the hardest.
I have heard that.
So if you, especially if it's a child or a parent or a spouse, like I've noticed it's really in those situations that seem the worst, because we can fake it till we make it for so long and we can fake it for a year. We can do a really good job of bottling up, not letting ourselves process it, getting on with daily tasks, getting the kids to school, dropping off, doing the sports, going here, getting this, going to work. You can be busy for a year, but after that year, it is almost impossible to keep going without you breaking and reaching a breaking point.
Sure.
And so if you're not seeking counseling, and you're not talking to anyone, then that's when sometimes the negative coping skills catch up with them.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sure. Mm-hmm. Wow. Those are all so good. And things for any disaster, for any trauma, yeah. for any difficult thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, even for something that we may consider really small, like your kid falls and hurts themselves and there's no blood, but right. they're really hurt of, I see that you're hurt, or I see that you're really upset. I'm sorry.
Yes.
You know, and then yeah. I love practical ways to be present. And I love that you said, just be present and you can come mm-hmm. up with an excuse. And after 2020, I think toilet paper works for anything, you know, like, why are you at my house? Well, I just thought in case I had some extra. So I wanted
to yeah, just in case we go on lockdown again, here you go.
I love it. I love it.
Just, Andrea, you said this about yourself, and I want to echo this back and affirm this in you, that you are real. You are a real person that's talking about real things and giving people real handles in life of how you can hold on to something. And I love that in everything that you've said today, it hasn't been because I've got it all together. I have it all figured out.
Right.
Anywhere has everything you've said has come back to, because I know that God is with me, because he's given me this person. Mm-hmm. He walked me through yes. this story, not just for me, but so that at the end of this story, I can turn around and help somebody else. And
yes.
it's the principle of generosity with your life. And not yes. just generosity with what's in your pocketbook. If that's not a Southern word, I don't know what is.
Yes, it is true.
That's just so, it's so encouraging and it's so attainable. These are real things. And then another thing that just kept spiraling through what you were saying is the importance, again, of just talking about it, of bringing mm-hmm. things out into the open, whether it's grief, whether it's trauma, whether it's a difficult situation. And so if you were to tell our listeners one thing, if they only got to hear this part of the podcast, what would you want to leave them with today?
I'd like to tell them that your past doesn't define you, but it does change you. Mm. And it's our job. It's our duty, or it's our, I guess, purpose here on this earth to walk through our difficult trials and to seek the Lord in what he is trying to teach us. So that way we can move on to the next blessing that he has, or the next, you know, leap of faith that he wants us to take, and know that in the future, there's still going to be more things that come, but those things don't define us. Mm-hmm. We're more than that. And so no matter what your past looks like, it doesn't matter, because the grace of God has covered that. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm.
thank you.
I love that. And he is with us. He yes. is with us.
Yes.
And I well set that last statement, but I think the one that I'll take away the most is the using your imagination to actually sit down at the table with mm-hmm. Jesus and mm-hmm. just lay it all out.
Yeah.
When you're hurt, he is the great comforter. When you're broken, he is the healer. When you are confused, he is the way. When yeah. you are, you know, on and on. When you're hopeless, he is the resurrection. When you are depressed, he is the life.
Yes.
And so to sit down at that table with him in your mind and lay it all out and mm-hmm. ask,
yeah.
and talk. And it doesn't mean he doesn't send you to someone with skin on right. after right. that. You know, right. someone like you, or a group, or a podcast, or a preacher, or a sermon, or a book, or but mm-hmm. He's so real, and yeah. he loves us all so much, and we love you, darling. Thanks for sharing your story with us and our
you.
Listeners. And listeners, we love you all so much. And you can look up Andrea on her Instagram or Facebook or webpage or blog, all over the place. It'll yeah. be in the show notes, and a couple books, a Bible study and a book, so you can get more.
Yes.
And we just thank you. And
thank
listeners,
you.
We'll see you next time.
We'll see you next time.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye.